Catherine Maggie Ward. I'm the managing editor of Reason Magazine, and I am here as your humble moderator for this discussion of immigration. We have with us two esteemed scholars on the subject. Shika Dalmia, who is a senior policy analyst at the Reason Foundation and a columnist for, I don't even know how many publications these days. ours most especially. She is going to tell us how Republicans are ruining their party by becoming the stooges of big labor. We also have Grover Norquist, who is the founder and president of Americans for Tax Reform. Arianna Huffington has called him the dark wizard of the right's anti-tax cult. And he is going to earn a round of applause for that one. And tell us about the perils of the GOP's anti-immigrant rhetoric. We'll have about 15 minutes from each, I think, and then Q&A from the audience. Enjoy.
Thanks, Catherine. And I just want to first begin by thanking Grover, because I asked him at a very last minute if he could come and speak, and he was really, really generous and a real sport. So thank you very much, Grover. And he might be a dark wizard of tax policy, but on immigration, he's just absolutely right. So you'll hear from him in a minute, but so let me get started. Soon after it became clear that Mitt Romney lost last November, because Latinos came out in swing states and voted in droves for Obama, Rush Limbaugh was absolutely outraged. He went on the air and said, Republicans have a problem. And the problem was not that Romney had thoroughly alienated his Latino voters during the primary by declaring that he'd deal with the unauthorized workers in their communities by getting them to voluntarily self-deport. He said the problem was that liberals play Santa with big government, and Republicans have no counter offer because they are restrained by their limited government principles. So I'm going to argue, actually, that nothing could be further from the truth. The reason that Republicans can't win Latinos, or other minorities for that matter, very rich minorities like Jewish people and Indian Americans and what have you, and Grover will get into that a little bit more, is because Republicans counter liberal Santa version of big government with what I call the Darth Vader idea of big government. So what Republicans show Hispanics and other voters is not the humane and kind version of limited government, which is what they could do to get them to vote for them. And nowhere is this clearer than on the issue of immigration. On this issue, Republicans are both the stupid party and the evil party rolled into one. Republicans have been holding up immigration reform in the House because they say that till they have full border security, we won't support any plan for citizenship for the 11 million undocumented workers in the country. So to achieve this full border security, there is this border surge in the Senate bill that has just passed. And as part of this surge, what has the Senate done? The Senate has authorized $45 billion to build a double fence twice as long as the one that we currently have on our southern border. They have also authorized 24-hour drone and other surveillance of the whole border. They have doubled the number of Border Patrol agents from 20,000 to 40,000. So there's going to be a Border Patrol agent every 1,000 feet. The $45 billion spending is about five times what the bill originally said was necessary to spend on border security. It is on top of $90 billion that we have spent on border security since 9/11. This represents a hundredfold increase in border security spending since 9/11, and this is from the party of austerity. In exchange, all that Republicans have to do is agree to hand temporary working status to the undocumented aliens right away. And then after 10 years, if all these border security provisions that will turn us into Fortress America are met, then these aliens will be able to apply for green cards. And then 5 years after that, they'll be able to apply for their citizenship. That's 15 years, starting maybe next year. By that time, half of them are going to be dead because they came, a lot of them came here because after the 1985 amnesty initiative. And, you know, and it's also 5 years more than what Rush Limbaugh himself said would be acceptable to him. He had said that he wants to deny the Democratic Party voters. And he said, if we give them some kind of a green card, but don't let them vote for 10 years, it would be okay with him. Now it's 15 years, and it's still not okay with Republicans. So Republicans, you know, are restrictionists. But what exactly is restrictionism? Now, given that about 99% of the Mexicans who come to this country come here to work, restrictionism is basically the idea of closed shop applied to immigration policy. Unions fight right-to-work laws because they don't want union workers undercutting all the sweet deals they have extracted from their employers. Likewise, restrictionism or border control is simply a means of protecting domestic workers from foreign competition. Hence, it is hardly a coincidence that until 15 years ago, restrictionism was a central plank of unions, not Republicans, actually. And none other than Vernon Briggs, a pro-union Cornell University professor, gleefully boasted in a recent article, at every juncture, and with no exception, prior to the 1980s, the union movement either directly instigated or strongly supported every legislative initiative enacted by Congress to restrict immigration and to enforce its provisions. The Knights of Labor, which morphed into the American Federation of Labor later on, was wholly and solely responsible for passing America's first serious anti-immigration measure, the 1882 Chinese Exclusion Act. Before that, America had virtually open borders. Later, Samuel Gompers, ironically a Jewish immigrant himself, who headed the AFL for about 38 years, starting in 1886, lobbied to have Japanese included in this Exclusion Act. He backed off when Japan agreed to voluntarily restrict its own people. Now, this is exactly, which something that you might all know, is that this is the tactic that the big three, the automakers, used 100 years later when they bullied the Japanese government into voluntarily imposing quotas on their car makers to avoid even worse trade restrictions. In fact, so our immigration laws today look like what our trade policy would have looked like if big business had written our trade policy. But Republicans of all people should understand that in a free economy, the market should regulate immigration flows, not federal bureaucrats or social engineers. Employer need should determine which foreign workers come to the country and in what numbers. The federal government's role should be limited to conducting security and health checks on foreign workers. Other than that, employers should be able to hire whomever they want, whenever they want, whether it is a Florida farmer who wants a apple picker from Mexico or Apple Computer, which wants computer geeks from China. But that is not how our immigration system currently works. For starters, it builds this completely economically meaningless distinction between skilled and unskilled workers. This, you know, distinction makes sense to bureaucrats, but it makes no sense to businesses. For businesses, the two kinds of workers are those who help them make profits and those who don't. And the greater profits means that a business can expand and grow, new businesses can form, the price of goods and services goes down, and real wages go up. In short, cheap labor grows the economic pie. And if the pie grows, then there are more jobs for everyone. I don't have to explain to this crowd that in a free market, jobs are not a zero-sum game. But although foreign workers don't threaten American jobs, they have historically threatened union jobs. Hence, from union standpoint, the two kinds of workers are those who threaten its chokehold and those who don't. And unskilled foreign labor has traditionally been a big threat to union, you know, to union strongholds. Hence, unions have subdivided our immigration laws into skilled and unskilled categories. And the skilled workers get hostile treatment, and the unskilled workers get the equivalent of waterboarding. Consider first what skilled workers that virtually everyone agrees are good for the economy have to go through courtesy big labor. And all these rules have been put in place by big labor, as Vernon Briggs himself said. Their saga begins when they generate a job offer and their employer applies for a temporary work permit called an H-1B visa. But the cap of this visa is so low that this visa gets filled within 10 days of opening up every year. And if the employers and the foreign workers who don't get this visa then have to cool their heels for another year, and then they can play the visa lottery again, and the odds remain the same. Now, for the lucky ones, the foreign workers who actually get a visa, their troubles are only just beginning. The visa imposes draconian restrictions on them just for the fun of it. There's no rational basis to this. Their spouses, no matter how qualified, are not allowed to work. They can't change jobs if they apply for a green card, which is a permanent work permit. But to get the green card, they must get the Labor Department to certify first that there are no qualified Americans to do their job. By the way, the Senate bill makes all of this infinitely worse, and we can get into that in the Q&A. But this is just the current system. The current wait time for green cards for Indian and Chinese high-tech workers is 12 years. So green card applicants are essentially indentured servants of their companies for about 12 to 15 years of their peak professional career time. And high-skilled workers are actually the lucky ones. Restrictionists insist that unskilled workers must wait their turn in a queue just like foreign professionals do to come to this country and get green cards. But the problem is that there is no queue for unskilled workers. Temporary work visas such as the H-2B that are meant for non-agricultural unskilled workers, which is the bulk of the illegal population, are even harder to get than H-1Bs. And that's because the cap on them is just as tight as those for H-1Bs, but the demand for them is four times greater. But that's actually not their main problem. Their main problem is that these applicants, these poor Mexican workers who need these H-2B visas, they have to show that they have property and even jobs to return to back home once their job over here is over. But if they had property and jobs, why would they want to come over here? So it's a catch-22 for them. The real kicker is that, you know, H-1B visa professionals, they can apply for a green card while being on an H-1B. But if these H-2B workers, if their visa official even like sniffs that they have some intention of staying in the country, they are permanently disbarred from again applying for their visa. That's the system that they work under. This is not how it used to work in America. Until about 1965, America had a guest worker program called the Barcero program with Mexico. It was a special program with Mexico that allowed Mexicans to very easily get a temporary work permit to work in the United States. So Mexicans could come and go with the availability of jobs. But big labor killed this program because they didn't like the competition, and they replaced it with the unworkable H-2B program. And so Mexicans who can no longer come and go with the jobs have now, you know, they were a cyclical, law-abiding, temporary workers who came and went with the jobs. Now they have become a permanent underclass of illegal immigrants. And this is completely a feature of our immigration laws. So now Republicans have a choice. They can fix the laws, or they can double down on this broken and bogus rule of law and try and enforce it more. And since this is the stupid party, what are they doing? They are doubling down. But the problem here is that, you know, F.A. Hayek in his Road to Serfdom said that when the government interferes with the peaceful, voluntary economic activity of individuals in order to achieve some collectivist end, it threatens even more of our freedoms. He said that it doesn't matter whether these ends are socialistic ones, such as income inequality through redistribution, or conservative ones, such as cultural preservation by restricting immigration. If these restrictions leave individuals substantially worse off, they will find ways to get around these restrictions, and that will unleash all kinds of unintended consequences. But the government's failure to achieve its ends will not be perceived as evidence that there is something wrong with these ends, that they are maybe out of sync with the normal aspirations of normal people. Rather, the failure will be blamed on an insufficient use of force in achieving them. Thus, an initial round of coercion will inevitably spawn subsequent rounds even more draconian. Now, this is the logic that is playing on in the war on drugs, and this is also the logic that is playing out in the war on immigrants. So in the face of widespread non-compliance with America's immigration laws, what have Republicans done? Reform these laws? No. I've already mentioned they are building a Berlin Wall on the Rio Grande, but what they also want is more interior enforcement. This means that they want to go after both illegals and the employers who hire them. This idea of employer sanctions was first proposed by the American Federation of Labor in 1986. Now, going after employers involves, you know, workplace raids, that was Bush's solution, and audit raids, which are Obama's solution. And I don't think it's paranoia to think that we might have SWAT raids next, just as we have in the war on drugs. The Gang of Eight bill wants to enforce all employers, also wants to force all employers to participate in E-Verify. Now, E-Verify involves paying $150 to verify the immigration status of each potential recruit, foreigner or American, against a federal database. The net effect of such a law will be to require all Americans to obtain a permission slip from the government in order to work. In other words, we are all illegals now till we can prove otherwise to our government. E-Verify is essentially a hidden employment tax. And to make sure that businesses pay it, Arizona and Alabama Republicans are resorting to something called business death penalties. This means that if an employer is caught with an illegal twice, they will revoke this employer's license. So in other words, they are shutting down American businesses to protect American jobs. So on one hand, Republicans oppose Obamacare's employer mandate. On the other hand, they are championing the equally draconian E-Verify mandate. But it doesn't stop there. Many cities are barring homeowners from renting rooms to workers who don't have papers. Congress has actually thought about prosecuting churches and soup kitchens that offer free meals to illegals on the grounds that they are aiding and abetting an illegal act. Giving undocumented workers a ride in your car in Arizona is already illegal. I'll let Grover talk about how terrible the politics of all this are for the GOP, but just let me say this. If Latinos did not vote for Republicans in the last election, is it because they were rejecting its limited government ideals and wanted free goodies? Or was it because their choice was between a benign and beneficent Democratic big government and a harsh and punitive Republican big government? Republicans can scream all they want that this kind and gentle liberal government is a facade and that it'll come back and become more draconian. But if you are a Hispanic, what do you see? What you see is the immediate and instant danger of what the Republicans are proposing to do to you compared to this distant danger of what might happen under a Democratic regime. So what should the Republicans do? Republicans will win when they position themselves not as agents of government, but as agents of individual choice and empowerment. Concretely, this means support school choice, religious freedom and toleration, eliminate the regulatory leviathan that crushes immigrant entrepreneurs, and cut taxes on small businesses. That ought to be the Republican alternative to the free goodies that Democrats want to offer. Incidentally, that has worked out really well for conservatives in Canada, and if you want, I can get into it more in the question and answer session. But Canada's conservatives have completely switched the immigrant vote, and it's to the point that the liberals now complain that the conservatives in Canada want more open policies because they want more voters. So, in short, Republicans have to become the Jedis of liberty, not the Darth Vader of big government.
One of the reasons the immigration issue is so frustrating is that Republicans, conservatives, are actually doing the other team's work, as was commented. The restrictionist Cesar Chavez started his job as the first Minuteman on the border with a baseball bat trying to keep Mexicans from coming over and competing with the unionized United Farm Workers, and somehow the Republicans decided they'd take that job over. Unions have traditionally, back 100 years, been the party against immigration. And it's so bad that back in the 80s, when I was doing College Republican work, and we'd work with other student groups, including union-financed front groups of the left. And we got a letter together to support Soviet Jewish emigration, and we thought we'd get all the student groups to sign it. None of the left or center groups that got money from the unions would sign it because it might imply we'd let them here. They were that much opposed to immigration. So how do we end up in this position? One reason is that is misdirection. You have a lot of people, John O'Sullivan, foreigner from Britain, used to run the National Review, gave a speech one day and he said, you know, immigrants come here, they go on welfare, they become Democrats, this is bad, we should stop immigration. And I went up to him afterwards and I explained to this foreigner that he'd given a great speech against welfare. But why did he act as if he'd just given a speech against immigrants? Most of the people in this country who become dependent on the state were born here. Most people go on welfare, were born on this side of the border. Why are you worried, focused on the relative handful that come in? And he said, well, you're right, of course, but we can't fix welfare. We're stuck with the welfare state. But we can close the border. Okay, this was before 1996, and I would argue that politics suggests that handled right, we can reform welfare. We made some real progress with aid to families with dependent children. And the Ryan Plan, which every single Republican in the House and Senate has endorsed, takes what was done on that block granting AFDC to the 185 means-tested welfare programs that we have at the national level and block grants them all out to the state, which would allow the 50 states to compete with each other, and you'd end up with dramatically lower costs on welfare and fewer people locked into welfare dependency. But rather than focus on getting that done, and when Bush came in, when he at least for 6 months had a Republican House, Senate, and presidency, he didn't go to block grant welfare. He focused on other things. And we have some conservatives who, where we should be focusing on reforming the welfare state for everybody, have decided to go shout at immigrants as if they developed our welfare state for us. You have the same thing with entitlements. The Heritage Foundation, which for 30 years had a very strong Reagan Republican pro-immigrant policy, Jack Kemp, Julian Simon, all that good stuff, until they decided to shift in 2007. But the Heritage Foundation did a study, or claimed, I'm sorry, they didn't do a study, they made the following assertion. Immigrants are bad because an immigrant who comes in will receive three times as much in benefits from Medicare as they pay in taxes. This is true of everybody born in this country. Okay, the entitlement system, particularly Medicare, but also to a certain extent Social Security, pays out more than people put in. The thing's going bankrupt. It's going bankrupt if there are no immigrants. It's going bankrupt if there are no other countries. Our welfare system is damaging and expensive if there were no immigrants. So to focus on being angry at immigrants for our welfare system, being angry at immigrants for our entitlement system. And again, the Ryan Plan handles the reform of entitlements, and particularly Medicare, in a way that ends that and makes it sustainable into the future. The other thing some people look at, they say, well, our education, our public schools run by unionized bureaucracy, doesn't teach people English very well, and doesn't teach them American history, okay? That's true for the people who are born here who go to public schools, okay? And somehow to blame foreigners for our education system and for our government school monopoly seems to be silly. It's an effort by some people to blame guys who can't vote against you, future immigrants, they're not even here, right, for our problems that we collectively, I mean, I wasn't in on this, I say we, I mean, everybody in the country, where we allowed the government to make these errors. And so it's not just everything that was pointed out that we're hurting ourselves by not allowing talent and youth and vitality to come in. And this idea that some people are low-skilled Yeah, maybe today they are, but after, you know, I mean, you come in, you get skills, your kids are a different story. So I just, this whole idea that we're keeping people out of the country, not allowing the market to decide who and how we hire people. We moved away from the whole idea of a guest worker program more recently and allowing people to come in. And we do so with these bizarre arguments of the left. More people will lead to environmental problems. More people will lead to entitlement systems going bankrupt. More people will reduce wages because, as Malthus explained to us, there's a fixed amount of stuff, and every time we have more people, we'll just have a smaller fraction of this fixed amount of stuff. The argument these guys make are arguments against having babies. Every bit is they are arguments against having immigrants. And it shouldn't surprise us, since the guys who actually wrote a lot of the anti-immigrant stuff are out of the camp as unhappy with babies as they are with immigrants. The other argument we get from some guys on the right is enforce the law. We're a nation of laws. We enforce the law. Okay. Those of us who are paying attention in the 1970s, when we had a 55-mile-an-hour speed limit, I don't remember, of course, it's before the Fairness Act, so we didn't have radio talk show hosts with political opinions at the time, but I don't remember people standing up and saying, you know what, there's all this illegal driving going on, and the first thing we have to do is enforce the law and arrest and fine all illegal driving. And then, after we've certified that every illegal driver has been arrested and fined or imprisoned, we could then have a conversation about whether 55-mile-an-hour speed limit is stupid. Okay? These are highways built for 75 miles an hour, and we have a law. The Hells Angels had that great billboard in California. It's not a good idea. It's just the law. Okay. We had this 55-mile-an-hour speed limit for highways designed and cars designed for 75, 80 miles an hour. And the obvious answer, and what we eventually began to do after 20 years of walking around, was we raise the speed limit and then start, and then enforce the speed limits. Montana has reasonable speed limits. I think it's about 90. We were doing fine with no speed limits, and the status insists on having some sort of speed limit somewhere. But why enforce the law makes sense if you have reasonable laws, if you have unreasonable laws. And our immigration policy is set at 55 mile an hour, and we have an economy that can take 75 and 80 miles an hour. Now the politics of this has shifted a little bit back in the right direction. In 1999-2000, I was in a meeting, about 10 of us, meeting with the head of the Republican Party, Jim Nicholson. And it was the major trade association heads, Chamber, NAM, NFIB, retailers, truckers, and me as Mr. Tax Guy. So we're sitting around the table, and they says, well, what's important? You people can talk for an hour about what everybody's interested in, so the Republican Party will know. And they went around the table alternating between cut the capital gains tax and take all the trial lawyers and put them in a plastic bag and drop them in the river. So we did that, and then the chairman said, thank you very much, it's been very helpful. He got up to leave, he's halfway out the door, and the guy from the Chamber of Commerce says, like in the second last scene in the Columbo movies, right, goes, well, there's just one other thing. Well, what is it? And he said, well, I don't have to bring it up. Well, what is it? Well, we never talk about it. What is it? He said, well, it's immigration, we're running out of workers. And it's 99-2000. And everybody then around the table, all the business representatives said, actually that dwarfs what I was talking about. That's a much bigger issue. And they went around the table and there were 80,000 too few truck drivers and 200,000 too few guys in retailers, on and on about the problems they had with the shortage of workers that was only gonna get worse. Luckily we had a recession to solve the problem for a while, but here you had the business community. The biggest thing on their mind was immigration reform, and when talking to Republican Party, didn't bring it up. They weren't organized. Organized labor has been organized for some time on the other side. The business community didn't even know how to bring it up. Thought it was like burping in public or something. They thought it was rude to, you know, bring it up. The various communities of faith were not as active, and now today the Roman Catholic Church is very active. The Southern Baptist Convention overwhelmingly voted in favor of comprehensive reform. The LDS Mormon Church is very strong on this. National Association of Evangelicals. So you have this whole collection sort of underneath the modern Republican Party. You've got these politicians listening to the echoes of radio talk show hosts who can be rich with a 5% market share. Okay, 5% of the people in the country listen to you on radio. You can retire rich. Okay, with 5% of the vote, you can't get elected dog catcher. And so there's a conflict of politicians listening to guys who deal in 5% market shares when they need to be speaking to 51% market shares if they're planning on getting elected from time to time. And so you've got the radio talk show hosts giving you an explanation which works with their listenership, or at least with the guys who call in. And you now have underneath the Republican Party every single business association in the United States and all of the major and minor religious communities. Now, if the Republican Party isn't the party representing people with jobs who go to church from time to time, you know, I don't quite know how they see their demographic, and yet that shifted underneath them. So I think some of the negative stuff that we're seeing, we can move back. I think we will end up with something along the lines of comprehensive, but the biggest challenge is the cost of doing that, as brought up earlier, this border security stuff. The way to get border security is to have a guest worker program, allow people to come here and work and come back and forth. We dropped from 800,000 arrests a year down to 40,000 arrests a year with the Bracero program under Eisenhower, and then when the unions got rid of it, went back to 1 million arrests a year at the border. It seems to me we don't need the whole border security and drones and whatnot. We need a guest worker program. And yet the R's are all talking about the idea of physical walls and guys with bayonets and moats and alligators, as if that was actually the solution of a challenge. And then worse is this whole E-Verify idea that we, you know, if we set up a Stasi here, that would be helpful. And this, what they're willing to sacrifice in the name of accomplishing something that a guest worker program would accomplish 99% of anyway, is I think problematic. But that said, I think we're moving slowly in the generally right direction of reckoning. And the other one is underneath all this, even ours will tell you we need more immigrants, we need guys, we need farmers, we need dairymen. This is new to me. 80% of the people who work in the dairy industry are without documents. It's a rather high percentage. They're, as we know, because they passed the evil milk subsidy laws. They're a powerful lobby in Washington, D.C. So we're hoping that the dairy people will at least help on this project. And moving forward, there's a straw man that some people set up to say, oh, people like me or Karl Rove are supposed to be arguing that if you pass immigration reform, then all the Hispanics will vote for it. That's not what either Karl or I have said. There are two parts to this. One, it's not the Hispanic vote. It's all the immigrant communities. And that includes not only the guys who are immigrants, Asian Americans, Japanese Americans, Chinese Americans, everybody, Indian Americans, people of all those communities have people in those communities who are not here with papers, and they're worried about their friends, their relatives, their coworkers. It's not just Hispanics. It's not just guys from this continent. And it's not even people who have immigrant problems this decade. It's people whose grandparents and great-grandparents are telling them stories about what it was like when they were picked up. So you've got this whole community of people who see anti-immigrant rhetoric as directed at them, even though, you know, Tom Tancredo thinks he's only spitting at Hispanics, and he's missing the point of the number of people he's going after. Second is, it's not that you do this and you win all the votes, it's that you can't even have a conversation about common ground until we deal with the issue of threatening to deport 11 million people. Can you imagine going to somebody and saying, you know, and this is some of the advice we get from some conservatives. Well, we go to Hispanics, again, missing the point, it's not just Hispanics that were irritating here. You go to Hispanics and you say, I want to talk to you about, you know, we agree on this pro-life issue and we want lower taxes and we're pro-family and you're pro-family. And look, while you and I talk about all this stuff we agree on, Igor here is going to go upstairs, grab your aunt, drag her down the stairs, and throw her out of the country. But we won't allow that to interfere with the wonderful conversation we're having about all the stuff we agree on. And somehow they really think you can have this conversation with that threat. If you remove the threat of mass deportation, then, which is one, good for the country, good for the economy. When we did amnesty in 86, the people who are amnestied, their income jumped 15% over the next year. Why? Because they could change jobs. They could interview for a new job and not worry about getting arrested. They could be mobile. They could get driver's licenses. They could have bank accounts, all sorts of things. They became more successful, and we could see that with 11 million people instead of a few million people. So that question of getting rid of this threat allows the Republicans to do what the Canadians have done. And I've talked to the Canadians. They have a very, very solid position. They're winning a majority of all the various minorities in Canada with a policy of being friendly, talking to them, and other not terribly difficult projects. But part of it is, at the beginning, getting into the conversation of being receptive to immigrants and to reforming immigration. So we're in a bad place now. I think we'll end up in a good place. It is to the interests of all people who love liberty and to the parties that try competently and sometimes incompetently to defend that liberty that we do that. Thanks.